Five kids came with a perplexing problem for me, and that was that for every kid, there were 2 feet with 2 shoes that need to be tied, which meant when I said, hey, we got to go get ice cream, I thought I was being a great dad. By the time everybody found their shoes, got their shoes on, and especially when they were young, had their shoes tied, I didn't care if they got ice cream or ever got food. I was done with it. I had such a hard time teaching my kids to tie their own shoes. It wasn't because I didn't know how, but it was, okay, bunny ears, and the rabbit goes around and into the hole. And everything. Tammy's dad, one of the most patient men I know, taught most, if not all, of our kids to tie their shoes. My kids later wore really, really cheap shoes. And the reason why is because Payless shoes had Velcro shoes. And I started buying those. When my kids tied their shoes, I was like, come on, let's do this. It's not that hard. I knew it when I was your age, probably. I said, we got things to do, people to see, places to go, get them tied, come on. And then they would come to me with great pride, and they would present before me the shoe that they had learned to tie. Do you remember that one? The one with knot after knot after knot after knot, that it was my job to untangle. In fact, I quit going fishing with my boys because I spent all my time untangling their line and re-tying on a hook and putting bait on it. I didn't care about, I like, just let them go barefoot. I mean, Adam and Eve did, and that was a perfect world, you know. So I hated that because it came with, not only did it require patience and a degree of discipline, it came with the knots they made, and I wanted to get it done. And I began to realize that that's a lot about discipline in our home. I said, we're not going to identify whether or not you should spank or not spank. I will tell you, I wished we had had time out when I was a boy. Because I could just see when my dad was so frustrated, so angry, he goes, mister, you go over there and think about it. Yeah, you were right. You know, that would have been a whole lot better. But when my dad disciplined, I had a hard time sitting down for a little bit. Let's just leave it at that. We're going to talk about that, but instead we're going to talk about some principles of discipline that I will hope will help. Discipline, in our mind, is a set of guardrails. Now, here in Florida, this may not resonate the way it does with somebody from Colorado, but in Colorado, you climb some of those 12 to 14,000 foot peaks I don't climb anything, I drive them, but when you're driving it, you go up that road that goes around and around, or back and forth up the side of a mountain, and every time there's a curb, there's a guardrail there. Typically, those guardrails, big wide silver guardrail, they have sometimes reflectors on them, and they serve a couple of purposes. Number one, they show you that there is a curve or a potential danger ahead. That's why the reflectors. Then, the railing itself serves to protect you from going beyond that, which would be off the edge of the mountain. It realizes that though you may bump it and it could do some minimal damage, that is better than you going off the edge and reaching the very bottom. And number three is you find that guardrails are always set in the safe zone. In other words, you may find a degree of safety on the other side of it initially, but beyond that is danger. You never put the guardrail at the bottom of the ditch. So you say, well, what does that have to do with discipline? It has to do with this. Discipline, number one, warns our children about potential dangers ahead. And then, though at times the punishment associated with discipline might cause a momentary inconvenience and even potentially the inability to sit down for a little bit comfortably, it's far better than the danger that lies behind. And beyond that is the fact that it always is set in a safe zone. Let's take, for example, the illustration of how many of you remember when you were growing up the curfew that your parents gave you? Anybody remember that? Do you remember what time it was?
10
o'clock. And why was it 10 o'clock? Because you're a girl and nothing good happens to girls after 10 o'clock, right? Anybody any later than 10 o'clock? Your brothers, right? Yeah, because everything happens fine with brothers after 10 o'clock. I found it to be just the opposite, but that's with a guy with four boys. Right now, the going average that I have seen is, ready, 1 o'clock in the morning. But the reasoning is the exact same, because nothing good happens after 1. I'm not saying who told me this, but Tammy said that that's when she found most of the fun stuff happened, was after 1 o'clock, you know. She just can't stay up till 1 o'clock to find out what it is anymore. But we had that kind of an idea. And so we would argue with our parents, this is ridiculous. I mean, I can see it now. Whether or not in the lives of my own children and me, this is ridiculous. Nobody has to be in at 10 o'clock. In generations ahead, they're going to get to stay out till 1. I'm asking for 10:15. I don't get it. I wanted the guardrail to be where? Further and further. And so, and this is not a comment on the use of alcohol as much as it is an illustration. For me personally, I choose not to drink alcohol. At first of all, growing up the way I did, it was not a temptation to me. I know that there is a potential of danger. We're not going to get into the one sip, one glass, one this kind of thing. I'm just saying that for me, the guardrail sets on the safe zone. Now, it may set, for some of you, way on the safe zone. That's okay. But I always know that it sets in the safe zone. And so discipline begins to set a series of guidelines to help our children to understand, yeah, of course it's in the safe zone. And there may be a little safety at 10:15. Believe it or not, girls can go out to 1 o'clock and come back still virtuous. But we didn't tell you that back then. But here's the thing. We know that there are dangers that lie ahead, and discipline is there to warn us and to protect us from those dangers. Obviously, in the grand scheme, we use discipline as we use it as part of a strategy to help our children be in a better relationship with God. And you're going, how did 10 o'clock do that? I don't know that it did, but I don't want to diss on your parents today. So here's what we're looking at. Typically, there is this approach to discipline. First of all, there is the discipline of isolation. That is a biblical principle. Flee wickedness. In other words, if the fire will burn you, a good rule of thumb is what? Stay away from the fire. When my kids were young, we camped a lot because we could just let them go into the wilderness, and if the bears ate them, we had less to take back home, right? But we would put a big campfire out, and it was there to light the evening, and maybe we'd roast marshmallows, and in cool Colorado summer nights, it would keep us warm. But we would tell the kids, stay away from the fire, which in their mind said what? Get a stick and poke it around in the fire. But the idea was what? There's danger there. Just stay away from the fire. Here are situations, circumstances, perhaps companions that are risky situations, and we tell our children simply what? Stay away. One of the things about the 10 o'clock or even the 1 o'clock curfew is to say what? I remember my dad saying, you know, the bars close, start closing up between 1 and 2. Guys are out on the road that shouldn't be out on the road. It's an unsafe situation. Didn't resonate with me because I wasn't going to the bars and I wasn't going to be around those. And I'm a good driver. I've been driving for 6 months. I don't get the deal here. I'm an expert. But the point was what? He says, stay away from situations and circumstances. That's a good principle. That's a biblical principle. But it's not a sufficient principle. What I mean by that in and of itself, and the reason why, is because at some point in time, we're going to have to go out into a hostile world. Right? In other words, we just can't stay away from everything. I liken it to the winter time in Colorado. As much as possible, you stay indoors unless you're one of those silly people that like to play in the snow, but you stay inside. But eventually, our kids had to go out. We did not let them go out in flip-flops and shorts and t-shirt in the dead of winter. We made sure they had adequate snow boots or shoes. They wore long pants, they wore a coat, perhaps a hat and glove if necessary. because we knew that not only could we isolate them, but we also could insulate them for a hostile world. So what we do sometimes as parents is we're going to insulate, and our kids become like that kid in that Christmas movie, A Christmas Story. You know the one I'm talking about? Where the kid's in the snowsuit and he can't even talk. And we do that by we going, well, I'm going to give you a book, chapter, and verse on everything, right? You're going to learn from the Genesis to the Revelations. I mean, you're going to learn it all, and that's going to insulate you. It's going to protect you. And our kids are going, well, I'm certainly insulated. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to function. But we think if I can't keep you from it, I'm going to so protect you that you are defended against it. Now, that's a good principle, and that's a biblical principle. It is good if you can't stay away. It is as Jesus prayed for his disciples. They're going to be in the world, but I don't want them to be of the world. Protect them, right? But even that doesn't present all the necessary steps for protecting our children. Keep them away. Isolate them. Insulate them. But also, we sometimes have that old need for a little bit of a vaccination. And much to the disagreement with modern medicine, who thinks a vaccination isn't what really a vaccination is, but a vaccination used to be this, that you gave the particular patient a little bit of the disease, allowing them to build an immunity for it. This is not a recommendation to drop your son off for 15 minutes at the local gentleman's club so that he will build a resistance to naked women. That's not what I'm suggesting. But what I am suggesting is at some point in time, you have to let them go and make some choices, make some decisions, and then reel them back in. My brother illustrates it this way. Imagine someone who was on the back of a speedboat water skiing. He says they are fastened to that boat by the line that holds them. But they are able to move right and left. In fact, if water skiing wasn't the right and the left, you're just being drugged by the boat. And so what we do is we give our children a degree of latitude, allowing them to make choices, and it may mean sometimes they make the wrong choice, but we're going to, at least for a stage, keep them close enough that those things aren't ultimately dangerous. In other words, a guardrail isn't like a bumper in bowling, right? I heard one person illustrate it this way. When I bowl and there are bumpers, I don't feel like any strike was entirely mine. In other words, I had to have the gutters to fully understand that what I was accomplishing because of the lessons that I had learned, not just somebody always reining me in and keeping where I needed to be. And I think that's good for parenting as well. There's one fourth thing, and then we're going to look at some real details or some specifics about how to create a discipline plan. And that's what I would simply call imitation. There's isolation, there's insulation, there's inoculation, and then there's imitation. Why? Because preachers just love those kinds of alliterations. But imitation is simply this: to lay before your children the person of Jesus, not just his teaching, not just his life events, not just his miracles, but the person of Jesus before our children. Because here's the thing. In the last 5 years, we have seen our children face things that you and I never imagined. Even good parents could not know what five years, much less 50 years down the road would hold. So how do we find something that transcends that time limitation? And the answer is the one who transcends time, Jesus. Not just like Jesus, be Jesus. Be an imitator of him. And we'll talk a little bit more about how that looks. So, let me give you five parts to your discipline plan. I'm going to use the old play school ring thing here. I don't even know what its official title is. This is a really fancy one, man. The old one I used to have was made of marble, which was hand-hewn. First of all, I'm going to start with this one right here on top, and that's this. Every discipline plan begins with love. It is cruelty to have a discipline plan that is not rooted in love. It is about relationship, not obedience. And so, obviously, we're going to talk about our love for God, but this is out of our love for children, and our love for children is not how we feel about them. Though we feel love for them, we just don't always feel like for them, if you know what I mean. But love is that seeks the well-being of another over even our own self. It's a sacrificial action. And so for us, we want to see that our love is why we do what we do. Here's the bad illustration of that. Sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, our discipline plan is a result of us being inconvenienced. I'm going to make a rule because I need the kids to go to bed. I need some peace and quiet. That's okay. But when it becomes that all the rules, we see this a lot with young parents. We'll talk about this more in a bit with seasons of parenting. But the first part of parenting is service oriented. You are at your children's beck and call. They cannot sustain themselves without you. They are, admittedly, an enormous inconvenience. And it is not your parents' job to rescue you from that. They have served their time and have been released on their own recognizance. You still have 7 years to 40 in the pen, okay? So when we begin to discipline for our convenience, when we begin to discipline out of our anger, when we are reactionary in our discipline, when it is not part of a discipline strategy, we have left the love aspect. And it is, as one individual put it, he said, rules without relationship is not discipline. And so it must start that way. But now let's look at four other principles that will help anybody at any stage of life, any season of parenting, to establish what we believe is a discipline plan for your children. And to do that, we want to look at the best parenting example we have in Scripture again, and that's God and His children. Specifically, we'll use the illustration of how God disciplined His children, Israel. Okay? Listen carefully to what he says in chapter 20 of the book of Exodus. You'll know it. This is the scene of the giving of the Ten Commandments. Then God spoke all of these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Notice that I'm the one who loves and cares for you. Not, I deserve, you are the inferior. She says, I'm the one who has constantly cared for you. That's where these things come from. He said, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven or above or on the earth, beneath the water or under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Listen, visiting iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. God lays down these four principles of discipline. He says, first of all, there is an instruction that needs to go on. It is surprising that my children did not know all of the rules that I had in my head and that I was creating on the fly, even though I never told them what those rules were. They were supposed to know. Anyone would know that. Anyone with any sense understood those things. And I did so, that is, at times, executed a discipline plan without there being instruction. God said, you don't know this. You should know this. But I'm going to tell you so you'll know this. You shall have no other gods before me. We recommend that if you have real rules in your household, write them down and post them on the refrigerator. Give them to your children and explain to them where those rules come from. It doesn't mean that they will openly accept them, but they won't come back with the, I never even knew. There's an old joke about a dad that walked by his kid and slapped him in the head. And he goes, what was that for? And he goes, it's for the thing you got away with and you didn't think I knew about. But we do that sometimes with our kids. We jerk them out of the seat, or we jerk them up from the pew, or we jerk them to their room. And we weren't quite that bad, as far as you know. No. And the kid has that look on his face like, what did I do? Everyone knows not to put a bean in your sister's ear. It's in the book. And his sister says, what? No. My sister says, what? Because she didn't have a bean in her ear. You're not following along here. An instruction is an important part of a discipline plan. Be sure that you have given your children that measure of understanding and the courtesy, because you are to be one who is teaching them. Teaching begins with instruction. Often when we hear the words discipline, our mind races to what? The punishment, right? You broke the rules. It's time for you to be disciplined. There's time for disciplinary action. Well, my parents disciplined me till I can't sit down. But discipline begins by instructing our children the way that they should go. That's why the guardrail is there to give a warning about there is a danger on the other side. How many of you have thought about the traffic light in the middle of the intersection as being a stoplight because it made you stop? But actually, it's a go light. It tells you when it's safe to go. And though we may not like the instruction, it is valuable for our overall success. So don't think as much about the instruction being what you can't do, but it tells you where you can operate in safely. Does that make some sense? Okay. But I don't know if you know this. Kids have a tendency to redefine the terms that you used. I think it was the somewhat now disgraced comedian, Bill Cosby, who said, when my dad said, did I just see you running? That he said, oh no, because you told me not to run. I was just walking real fast, right? So what it requires is that beyond the instruction, there requires some correction. It is where we make it clear what the instruction meant and we add with it the consequences that might go along with failing to do that instruction. God tells his children, he says, you shall have no other gods before me. And they go, got it. And by the way, did you notice this beautiful statue that we've carved and put out in the garden in front of the house? And he said, let me clarify this for you. When I said not to have any gods before me, I meant don't carve yourself one out of stone or wood. Don't worship an image made by the hands of a created being and say that it is the worship that you're rendering to the Creator. By the way, side note, no extra charge. Oh, don't tell David. Tell him I'm charging extra for this and he owes me. But here's the thing is, the problem with idolatry was the worship of the thing that the worshiper's hand had made. In other words, idolatry is really a worship of us. So God says, when I said you should have no other gods before me, I mean no carved ones, no worshipped ones. When I said I wanted you in at a reasonable hour, I meant 9:58. I just had a great idea. Oh, no, that was the bell out front. I meant 9:58, right? I gave you the instruction. I said, be smart out there. You mean taking 10 of my friends in a car that holds six and driving like a maniac? I thought that was being smart. All of them thought I was smart. I said, you're just the smartest of the dumb people, which still makes you a dumb person. So what we have to do is we let them go out there and we said, I hate to pick on you, but you're just too nice. When I said 10 and you thought 10:15 was okay, if that happens again, it'll be 9:30 next time. God says, listen, I'm going to correct you. I want to make it clear. I want to make sure that you understand the instruction I gave, right? But the instruction needs to come with growth and understanding. And he said, so now you know, and now you understand, and I'm going to add to that a consequence or a reward that comes as a result of that. I want it to matter. Few times did I sit down with my kids and do this. Now, I asked you to pick up your room, and it's not. Let's have a chat about what I meant by that and the potential consequences of that. First of all, in my discipline, I never spoke at this level ever. But I did find myself having to do this. When I said pick up your room, because by the way, my kids took that instruction. They shoved everything in their room under their bed. The room is clean. Any of you had that experience, or is it just my good for nothing? And they're good for nothing because I raised them to be just like me, okay? But I had to say something to this effect. That means I want your dirty clothes in the laundry room. I want the clothes here that are clean and your coat. I need those hung up appropriately. I need the toys in the toy box, the books on the bookshelf. And we don't like that because that takes what? Time. Get your Velcro shoes on. We're going for ice cream and everybody's going to have a good time. That's the way we are. We got to take time to make sure that they fully understand what we say we should know automatically. Okay? Number three. Believe it or not, even when they know the right thing to do, and when we have clarified what that means, they choose to do whatever they want to do. In other words, they're going to break the rules. They're going to knowingly break the rules. In fact, at times, they are going to knowingly not only break the rules, but defiantly break the rules. As if to go, and there's no parent that likes, okay? So there's a consequence, right? There was instruction, there was warning and consequence given, and now it's time, you're going to bump the rail. I have warned you there's a curve, there is a guardrail set, and by the way, let me just clarify this. There are two kinds of guardrails. There are God's There are the guardrails of the divine. Okay, that way I don't have two G's in there. There are God's guardrails and there's your guardrails. God's guardrails are the ones that he sets. Your guardrails are the ones that God permits you to set. Don't confuse the two or try to confuse the two with your kids. When I was a boy, we didn't go to the school dance. Why? Because the Bible says not to. I'm not exaggerating. My father was not inconsistent, but he allowed me as part of the student council to sell tickets at the school dance in junior high. And that was just trust me, there was nothing inappropriate going on in that other than the dancing. It was horrible. But I literally was instructed that it was in the gym. I could stand on this side of the line, but I couldn't stand here to sell the ticket. Out of the dance, in the dance. Out of the dance, in out of... Oh, wait, I got all kids, and that's what happened. Just start getting to dancing, right? So, but it's okay. Just don't back it with because God says so. It's okay to say because that is my rule as a parent who's been given responsibility to lead you back to God. Just don't write checks that God is expected to cash for you. So, but anyway, now there's a consequence. The rule's been broken. Whether it is one of God's laws or one of your parents' rules, the law's been broken, and there must be a consequence associated with it. I have a son and daughter-in-law that live in Denver. Both are professional educators, and early on, their children used a word that I didn't even know existed until I was much older. They would go, there will be a consequence for that because their creepy teacher mother talks in those kinds of terms. I just said you were going to see Jesus today, okay? But there's a consequence to that, right? There's a consequence. So there is a time, but let me remind you that that is consistent with the instruction, the warning, and the love that was intended. Now, I heard somebody one time say, well, now, if you saw somebody standing out in the street and there was a truck coming and you yelled to them, there's a truck coming, and they didn't move, wouldn't you go and shove them even if it skinned their knee? And I go, yeah, I would. But I wouldn't, at the first call, go and shove them down and drag them in the gravel to the edge of the road and go, I just did that because I loved you. Right? In other words, the way that I exercise punishment is going to be consistent with theirs. That old deal about I love you and this is going to hurt me more than it is you, it's going to hurt them, at least initially, more than it hurts me. It only hurts me because they're having to hurt. So when punishment comes along, it must be consistent. So God says what? In fact, this is God's consistent with his instruction. He says, listen, I am the Lord your God, and I am a jealous God, and here's the punishment. I will visit the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. I want you to imagine that you have sitting before you a four-year-old, that you've told him or her what you're not wanting them to do. And then you, with great patience, said, and if you do, there's going to be a consequence. And then I said, I told you not to do that. And so I am going to visit the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations, for those, I mean, it's not quite that, but that's a little rattling to your cage, right? That's a little unsettling. God said, listen, I am one who punishes those who hate me. That's a don't want to be in a relationship with me mode. And really, it's not as much that I'm going to punish as I can't protect you. And I think it's really good when we talk about those kind of things that I'm going to have to let them bump the rail. They're going to have to break their taillight. Nope. I'll break their taillight. They're going to have to bump the rail. They're going to have to scratch the bumper, scrape the side of the car, because it is better for them to have that consequence than what lies beyond. I do not want my children to see that they behave, and be careful about this, that they behave the way that they do so as not to get a spanking, to not to get grounded, to not to get a timeout. I want them to see the value that the punishment is I would rather you be punished this way than suffer this much grander consequence. And so it's going to take me bumping your bumper just a little bit to do that. Now that's where most discipline plans end. I told you once. I told you twice. And now I'm going to drop the hammer. But there's another element in this discipline plan. And it comes from what God says after that I just read. He says, but I will show loving kindness to thousands who love me and behave as if they do. Any of you get paid when you were a kid for grades at school? Anybody raise your hand? Okay. I never got paid for a grade. I just recently was at a place with some teenagers. You know what the going rate is for an A? $50. $50. I would still be broke today because my problem wasn't need for money. My problem was a need for smarts. But I thought that is the... Do you remember how much you were paid?
Well, it wasn't by my parents. It was actually by my...
Wherever you can get it, that's good. Okay, do you remember what you got for like for an... Was it like for an A, B, C? Okay. Now you know who to borrow money from back there. No, but here's the thing is, that seems ridiculous to me. Why? Because as my teacher told me on the first day, you have an A in this class and it's yours to lose. So I dropped out of school on day two and thought I had straight A's. But, no, the point was what? That the A was a measure of my success in doing what needed to be done. What needed to be done was not just my teacher's rules, not just the Board of Education's rule. They were things that came as a result of doing what? For you to be proficient in life, you need to be able to read and to write and apparently to skip. Because I got marked down in kindergarten, Wayne cannot skip, like I was some disgrace. I found a need for algebra. I found a need for science. I have not yet found a need for skipping ever. One guy said, I did before the draft board, but that was a different thing altogether. So here's the thing, that God rewards us. In fact, God does more about reward than he does about consequence. There is a time for God to lead us with the lash, with the punishment. There's times when God and for us as parents that we need to tell our children, guess what? You don't want the consequence. It's bad. The consequence is bad. But at the same time, we don't ever lay before them the reward. Can you imagine saying, I need you to clean up your room, or I've asked you to clean up your room, I need you to clean up your room. If you don't clean up your room in 30 minutes, you're grounded. But if you do, I'm going to take you for ice cream. Now, what you're saying is, well, that's just bribing them. God bribes us all the time, right? In fact, God is trying to out-bribe a world that says, I can give you this, 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 I can give you this. And God comes in and he says, I don't want you to have any fun. Stay with me. That's not what he says. He says, let me tell you where those things end up and where these things end up. I want the best for you. I want to reward you for that. I was visiting with a former police chief who worked in the correction system in Virginia. And he said, amongst young black men that were coming into the correctional facilities, they were finding that the punishments were not having any consequence on them. As quickly as they were out, for whatever the reason they were in, they were back in again. He said, you know what we found is had the greatest? Is when they were rewarded for their good behavior, not just punished for their bad. Now that's not a universal principle, and that's not to discount the role of punishment, but what it is to say is this, is that there is a place for us to receive a reward. And the more that we can place before our children the why it's good, the better off our discipline plan will be. It is the Living Bible, which is a paraphrase, and it's not one that I typically recommend for deep Bible study, but sometimes it encapsulates what I believe is the true substance of the text. Listen to how it renders Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. He says, my son, don't be angry when the Lord punishes you. Don't be discouraged when he has to show you where you're wrong. For when he punishes you, it proves that he loves you. When he whips you, it proves you really are his child. Let God train you for what he is doing, any loving father does for his children. Who ever heard of a son who was never corrected? If God doesn't punish you when you need it, as other fathers punish their sons, that means you aren't really God's son at all, that you don't really belong in his family. Since we respect our fathers here on earth, though they punish us, should we not all the more cheerfully submit to God's training so that we can really begin to live? Our earthly fathers trained us for a few brief years, doing the best for us they knew how, but God's correction is always right and for our best good, that we may share in His holiness. Being punished isn't enjoyable when it's happening. It hurts. But afterwards, we can see a result of quiet growth in grace and character. That's what discipline is all about. Tammy and I come to the conclusion that really, discipline is about instilling a measure of self-discipline. But don't fool that into believing that we're allowing our children then to go on and discipline themselves. But it is that internal self-discipline is developed when external discipline is exercised. In other words, as we communicate God's discipline, they are disciplined in a way that it is He who leads them beyond this place. Not our rules, not our regulations, not even to that degree at some point our direct responsibility, but it's them holding on to God. And that's accomplished when we love, instruct, correct, punish appropriately, and then reward acceptably to get them to be where they need to. And I believe that those threads, no matter how that punishment might be executed, perhaps executed is not a good word to use there. But however that discipline manifests itself, that those principles are enduring, and they come certainly from what God did with His own children.